This is a production of the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, visit elmad.pardes.org.
So, you know that Moshe doesn't appear in the Haggadah, right? Have you talked about that yet today?
No.
Okay, Moshe doesn't appear in the Haggadah, but which is counterintuitive in the extreme. But we're not going to talk about why that is. We're going to talk about why Avraham Avinu does appear in the Haggadah and why he appears so much in the Haggadah. Okay, so that's the goal, is to think it. And I actually think just like that question could be Diana. You could take that question to your, we're going to identify immediately why, where he appears in the Haggadah, and then you'll be like, whoa. And just the awareness of Avraham in the Haggadah is an interesting question you can bring to your Seder, and I think there's a lot to discuss about it. Even though I'm going to go in a direction, I actually am aware of other, maybe even equally correct directions, if that makes sense. Do you hear what I'm saying? Like, there are, even though I know that at the end you're going to say, oh my gosh, how could it be any other way? Because Nietzsche is explained to me truth with a capital T. It's possible that there are other truths with capital T's to the question of Avraham in the Haggadah. And then, before I give away what I'm going to do after that, let's just answer that. Where is Avraham Avinu in the Haggadah? Arami Oved Avi. Okay, that is your first answer. Avraham, which maybe you didn't know. Arami Oved Avi. My father was, what, translate those words? Give me a translation.
Like a crossing Aramean.
My father was a crossing Aramean. Which, and then you've got it, so it's Avraham. Explain.
That he came from Aramean lands originally.
Right, he was Aramean, and he was wandering around, didn't know where he was going, and that's and that explains it. The are there more source sheets? Does anyone have a source sheet in front of them?
Right,
there are more over here.
So, my father Avraham was Aramean, and never mind that the Haggadah does not translate it that way, right? The Haggadah says that who's the Aramean and who's the father in the Haggadah?
Yaakov.
Okay. Levan b'kesh la'akor t'akol. That it was that, but the Rashbam understands that Avraham was the wandering Aramean. Okay, where else is Avraham in the Haggadah? Come on, and that's a good answer. I like it. Yep, that where in Birkat Hamazon is that? Yes. Okay. Good. Yeah. Okay.
Shema et kolenu kumash neamar et Avraham et Yitzchak ve et Yaakov.
Yeah, Yofi, great, excellent. These are two that I didn't even think of, both of them, but they're both in the, they are there. Great. What other ones?
Looking on page 28 of this Haggadah, Terah was the father of Avram, father of Noah, of
course. Right, okay, great. That one's an important one. 28. I have 28 in that Haggadah, which in this Haggadah is 30.
Well, right after that.
Okay, so it says, Mitzchila ovdei ovarazara hayu avotenu. Originally, our ancestors were idol worshippers. Which ancestor of ours was an idol worshipper? Okay, one possibility is Avraham Avinu just before. Another possibility is Terah, his father. Another possibility?
Yeah.
Am Yisrael, even in Egypt. Okay, just before we left Egypt. Okay, so all the but let's assume. I think the simple reading of this is that, or I don't know what the simple reading is, but I'm going to go with this one is about Avraham. And the reason why I'm going to say that it's about Avraham is because afterwards it goes on to say, as it says in the book of Yoshua. Now Yoshua here gives like a longer history of the Jewish people in chapter 24, but they only cite the two verses, the ones that that Abigail just cited. So says Hashem, God of Israel, your fathers always lived beyond the Euphrates River, Terach, the son of Abraham and Nahor, and they served other gods. And I took Abraham from beyond the river and led him through the land of Canaan. Okay, so our story started there with Abraham, and it cuts off the history. It doesn't give us the whole history because it wants to emphasize Abraham at this point. Okay, why does it want to emphasize Abraham at this point? Because of the next paragraph. What's the very next paragraph there? In the middle of page 28 or page 30?
The
promise. Baruch shomer haftachato liYisrael. Blessed is who keeps your promises to Israel. Let's read that paragraph. Go ahead, read that paragraph out loud. In English, Rachel, you're doing a good job.
For the Holy One, blessed is he, had already worked out the end of their captivity in order to fulfill what he had said to our father Abraham at the covenant between the portions. As it is said, he said to Abram, know surely that thy seed shall be strangers in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them for 400 years, and also that nation whom they shall serve will I judge. And afterwards they will come out with great possessions.
Oy, this is a big one. Okay? This is what God said to Abraham. It's called Brit Ben Ptarim. The covenant of the halves. Okay? The core of the covenant of the halves is... tell me if you already learned this in Chumash this year. Okay, you guys have just done this, and so you know a lot about this Brit Ben Ptarim. I didn't seem like so many people raised their hands. Can I just see that again? Because I was expecting more hands. Raise your hand if you learned about Brit Ben Ptarim in your Chumash class so far this year. Most people did not learn about it. What are you guys up to in your Chumash class? You're brave, but what chapter are you in? But it's in there in Lech Lecha. It's in there. You just haven't gotten to it yet. You're at the beginning of Lech Lecha.
Which, can you explain it?
Okay, what is Brit Ben Ptarim? Brit Ben Ptarim is this moment of darkness. Okay, and then he falls asleep, and then?
And then he has a dream.
And then he has a dream.
And things aren't looking good, and then God's like, you're going to be enslaved for a long time, but it's going to be okay, because in the fourth generation, then you'll come back out, and the land will be given to you then.
Okay, God told Abraham in this dream, and then, okay, good, Steph, I'm going to give a chance to say that in a second. God told Abraham in this dream that the whole story, he like actually explained to him, as it says here, that God had, blessed is he, God, who calculated the end of the bondage in order to do what he said. Right? So he already exposed it in Bereshit 15 or 14. He told there it is, 15. It's right there on your source sheet. He exposed what's going to happen at the end of Pesach night already a book and a half before it happens, which is that you're going to be enslaved for 400 years, and afterwards you're going to go out with a lot of property. Okay? Imagine what it's like. How would you feel right now to know what's going to happen in the end? And you could just... And especially if someone told you that that's what's going to happen in the end. Okay?
And what's going to happen in the end.
So it's kind of a funny thing, but it's like he knew the end of the book before he ever had to live the life. I mean, he wasn't young when he got this prophecy, but he knows from the whole time that his children and his grandchildren are going to be enslaved in Egypt in a land, and that in 400 years it's all going to... Don't worry, Abraham, in 400 years it's all going to be okay. Think about what that means to us. Okay, but you have to approach... We're putting right at the beginning of the book this understanding that it's all part of a plan. Okay? And you have to read all... We read the whole night of the Haggadah that way, and we read the whole of Genesis and Exodus that way, knowing that it's a plan. okay, a plan that we will be slaves for 400 years, and only afterwards we'll go out and everything will be great. Okay, and then there, and this is called a covenant of the haves. Why, Steph?
Well, he has to slit three animals, like a cow, a
ram, right,
and a goat, and then and he has dogs there as well, and like in between them.
Yep. Okay, so he splits the animals, which it seems like are. Who knows? They've been attributed to many symbols, but one of the basic symbol, I think, is three generations, and the fourth generation will return. This generation's gone, sorry. This generation's gone, trash, sorry. This generation's gone, trash, sorry. The fourth generation's going to come back, and everything's going to be okay. Okay, imagine how those animals feel, the ones that are the trash. Wait, I don't know where we are in the covenant, but Abraham walks between the halves of the trashed animals and creates a covenant of, I promise, that even though I'm trashing you and you and you and you, the next guy's going to come. Okay, that is the core of the Pesach story, and we had to put it here right at the beginning, and that's why we raise our glasses and we say V'hishem. Sorry, let me get this key again. V'hishem da lavotein. You can read. They see it on page 30. V'hishem da lavotein. It's the big E on page 30. Okay, the in both Haggadahs are the. That promise is the one, this moment of the covenant of the halves is the moment that stood by us and our fathers forever, because we know that God made this covenant, and we know it's such a funny thing. It's like, oh, we're so happy because it's not just this year that they tried to kill us, but every generation they tried to kill us. No, that's what we're singing. Those are the words, okay? But HaKadosh Baruch Hu Matzileinu Miyadam. But in the fourth generation, somebody is going to be saved, okay? I'm just telling you that's what it says. I didn't. And that is also when on page 32, when it says, if you turn the page, right, it says, an Aramean attempted to destroy my father. That's not interpreting it, the Haggadah, the way that we interpreted it. And then he descended to Egypt. Here they're assuming it's Yaakov that's descending, and sojourned there with a few people, and he became a nation great, mighty, and numerous. And the Haggadah says, and then he descended to Egypt, compelled by the divine decree. Anus al pi hadibor. Do you see that? What does it mean that he was anus al pi hadibor? Anus, he was compelled by the divine decree. What does that mean? Just the simple reading. 400 years, okay? This page that we read before, where God said at the beginning in Genesis 15, God said, sorry, we have to have three generations of trash, okay? You're going to be sacrificed. You're going to have to go down to Egypt. Yaakov then knew, okay? He knows that he's the trash, okay? He is forced by the word of God, by that promise in Genesis 15, to descend to Egypt knowing what he knows, which is that he's not coming out, and his grandson's not coming out, and only his great-grandson is going to come out. Okay, and that's what it means, that he's forced on the word, and it just can sort of make you feel everything a little bit differently as we relate to it. So that's Abraham in the Haggadah, okay? Abraham has now, he appears. Our story the core reason why Abraham is in the Haggadah is because of Brit Bein HaTarim. This is what's so focused. He's there in Brit Bein HaTarim. He's there in the beginning. Our ancestors were idol worshippers, and they went there, and that was so. That's where our exile begins, and that's where our redemption begins, right? Because Yaakov, even though at that moment that he knows he's going down and he's not coming back, and he's going to have a hard life, he also knows that there's exile at the end of that tunnel, right from the beginning. So so physically and spiritually, everything begins with Abraham. Our physical, the exile and the redemption, and that is noted here in the Haggadah in a very powerful way. What I want to do now, okay, where I'm hoping to go, is to understand this idea of covenant. Okay, the key word, brit, covenant. What is this thing? Why is it important? Okay, and what is the content of the covenant? And I want to try to fill it out in a triangle for us, okay, with brit in the middle. We've got Brit Bein HaTarim at the top to fill out Avraham as the covenant builder, okay? Because we've said that all of Exodus is the culmination of a covenant, and it's a covenation, by the way, that yes, in every generation we reenact this covenant. Okay, so we need to have this covenant in our center. We're gonna have. So we are starting with Brit Bein HaTarim, and we want to see what is the covenant exactly that Abraham has? Because as soon as you start to think about Abraham, you start to think about other covenants. I'm inspired, but entirely in this class by the Pachad Yitzchak. He is Rav Yitzchak Huttner. Died in the 80s, I believe, in Brooklyn, spent time in the Hebron Yeshiva during the Hebron massacres. He was there, was influenced by Kabbalah, by the Maharal, by Rav Kook. He never cites Rav Kook because he's not a Zionist. Okay, Rav Kook was a bad guy from the perspective of, but he's there. He read him when people weren't looking, and his insights are in there, which just gives you a sense of that's the kind of guy I want to read, is the kind of guy that is reading broadly when people aren't looking and influenced by a lot of people. And it's really, I like to think of it as inspiration for Gemara brains. Because it is rooted in Gemara, and it's heavy here in its allusions to things. and I just want to do one paragraph, really, of the Pachad Yitzchak. But in order to build to that one paragraph of the Pachad Yitzchak, it'd be really good to go through the entirety of this 5-page source sheet right now. Okay, so I'm going to give you, let's see. I have till 1:10, and it's only 12 o'clock right now. So I'm going to save the 40 minutes for myself at the end and give you half an hour right now to just really think about this word, Brit and Avraham Avinu, okay? And to help you with that, you've got the next few pages. No, without pressure. Enjoy them. Feel free to use your Haggadah also at the same time to look back and forth and think about how this covenant informs our Seder. Because you see, now that you maybe weren't paying attention to it before, but now that you've paid attention to it, you see that it's you can't understand the Seder without it. Okay? Go. Okay, it's going to be annoying that people are going to keep walking in, but I think that we should start. Just leave the door open, I think, because it'll, yeah, just like that, so people will come in on the one hand, on the other. I know it's annoying, but it's hard if you don't have breaks, then you can't learn. You don't need me to tell you. Oh my gosh. It seems so, maybe you don't get it, but it's not, after he tells you, it's all obvious, right? But before, you maybe didn't think about the importance. Did you ever wonder about Brit Milah and its connection to, or we know that we're going to put here, Brit Milah. It's clear that Milah, circumcision, okay, the covenant of circumcision, it is connected to Pesach. Why is it connected to Pesach?
Because it happens, right? Brit Milah happens before the redemption happens. It seems to be like a crucial step.
Okay, good. We're going to get there. Even before we get to there.
You can't eat the Korban Pesach unless you have the Brit Milah.
You can't eat the Korban Pesach unless you eat the Brit Milah. No. I'm so glad people are listening. It was a test and it worked. All of you get candies. You can't eat from the Korban Pesach unless you've had Brit Milah. Okay, Jamie showed me a source about the cup. This is about the Brit of Dom. Okay, what? And I think that it's actually not that we could connect, maybe add. Someone has before added Dam Nida, menstrual blood, to this covenant, which was an attempt to bring women in. So it's good to know if anyone read this, I certainly did, and had this moment of like, wait, where are the women in this covenant? So the people have asked your question before. I'll just acknowledge it. But you can't eat from the Paschal sacrifice unless you're circumcised. And there's only there's something that these two mitzvahs, Pesach and Milah, have in common. What is it that they have in common? They're the only two positive. Usually, if you a sin of omission, meaning I overslept and I didn't daven shacharit, I overslept and I didn't put on tefillin. Okay, I was supposed to write a thank you note, but I never got around to it. Okay, those are sins of omission. For them, God forgives you as soon as you repent. All you have to do is say, I'm so sorry I didn't write you a thank you note, but I really appreciate it. And God immediately forgives you. Except for two positive commandments that you can be punished for that you didn't do. And that is Brit Milah and eating the Korban Pesach. You have to eat the Korban Pesach. That's why we have a second chance on Pesach Sheni. Okay, so these two mitzvahs, the Korban Pesach and Milah, go together already. And then, I didn't think that was in Pshuto Shel Mikra. Did you find it in Pshuto Shel Mikra? In the Pshat? Well, then we get to Rachel's stage. Okay, Rachel saw it in Rashi. I didn't see it before Rashi. Rashi didn't think of it, of course. It's in the Midrash, but let's look at that Midrash. It's amazing how they do it. Yeah.
There's another aspect of this that to me is very important.
Yes.
And that is, if you don't accept the Brit of Abraham, there's no reason to bring the Korban Pesach. Because you can't bring the Korban Pesach with a full Kavanah.
You're either in or you're not in.
Right. I mean, and that's the sign that you're in. And so if you don't have the Brit Milah, then you can't.
I mean, if you're in the Torah, if you're a ger, you're not fully in, which is interesting, meaning like you do the Brit Milah and you're sort of in, but not fully.
Or you are fully in.
Because according to the source we read, that if you talked about Gior, that was the Gior.
No, but they didn't have Gior.
We would talk about history, like historically and phenomenologically, and those are two different.
In the time of the text. The text is very simple. Because if you have a Brit Milah, you can bring the Korban Pesach. If you don't have a Brit Milah, you're not part of the Chavurah, and you can't be part of the Korban Pesach.
So in this reading, then, once you're in.
You could include other people maybe who are completely in.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe. All right. Let's look at this Rashi. Okay. Rashi on page 2. The first full source on page 2. He's commenting on this that you have to set aside your Paschal lamb on the 10th, right? And you have to have it there for inspection. And what is this thing of inspection? okay, that the animal requires inspection for a blemish 4 days before its slaughter. Now, why was the a designated animal to be taken 4 days before its slaughter, something not required in the Paschal sacrifice later generations, meaning later on we don't have to? Rabbi Matia, the son of Harash, used to say, behold, God says, okay, and then he gets out this passage in Yechezkel. It's a crazy passage in Yechezkel. And once you know it, you can know that it also appears in the Haggadah. Have you ever wondered? You'll be that person at the Seder that's like, when they on page 32, I just want you to see, it says, right, Arami Oved Avi, and you, my father was a, and we became, and they became a nation, great, mighty, and numerous. Okay, numerous is being translated here as Rav. And there, as it says in Yechezkel, I bade you grow as numerous as the plants of the field. You grew and developed and became charming, beautiful, and beautiful of figure, that means shapely, and your hair had grown long, but you were naked and bare, and I passed over you and saw you downtrodden in your blood, and I said to you, and Corin, JPS translates it, despite your blood you shall live, despite your blood you shall live, but here he's translating it according to our Midrash, through your blood you shall live, through your blood you shall live. Now he switched around the order of the verses. If you open up the Tanakh, you'll see that he cited, he ends with verse 6 and starts with verse 7, okay? All of that is, once you know that this is here, it's all because of this Midrash, okay? What happens? God says, he saw, behold, it was your time of love. This is a crazy story, and it is a metaphor in the text, okay? Sefer Yechezkel says, God saw the Jewish people like an abandoned child. Okay, what do you call them? The child that's been like a leftling? Something, that, you know, this like abandoned.
Foundling.
Foundling. Foundling. I knew there was a ling in there. A foundling who is abandoned, and God sees this child as a girl child who has the potential. She's sexy and beautiful, but she's in her blood, and God says, oh, I'll take you in. Okay, so God sees that you have become beautiful, and it's time for you to be redeemed. Meaning you, and God's, and that is, and what does he mean by that? Your time of love has come, the time of the fulfillment of the oath that I swore to Avraham Avinu. It was time for the breed Bnei Petarim to come, and I see Bnei Israel. And what do I see when I see Bnei Israel? I see that they are naked and bare. What does it mean, naked and bare? We thought naked and bare means that we are sexy and gorgeous. Okay, I think that's the simple reading. It's like, okay, we've got breasts and the shadayim, we've grown breasts and we're feeling beautiful. You're naked and bare means that you have no mitzvahs. God wants to bring us out because God has this covenant back here. But he gets there and he sees that we actually are also trash. First generation trash, second generation trash, third generation trash, and then it's the fourth generation and I'm supposed to redeem you, but look what happened. It turns out that you've actually got nothing going for you. That's the pshat. I'm not making it up. It's the pshat. God comes there and he says, oh my gosh, you've got nothing going for you. When they say about Bnei Israel that there's 49 levels of tumah, 49 levels of impurity, and the Jews are we're on the 49th, and if we had just taken one more step across the abyss, there would have been no getting us back. And so the question, of course, is why on earth would God be interested in us? Why doesn't God turn around right then and say, oh, bad choice, let's start over? How many of you have started over in those situations, right? It's like, okay, I'll just give up. Because of the Brit Bein HaPetarim. Okay? So this Brit Bein HaPetarim has, God says, well, I promised to redeem them, so I'm going to stick with them. Even though God should have left us there, but he doesn't want to abandon us. He takes us out because of the Brit Bein HaPetarim. And this is where it gets interesting, because if God has already promised the Brit Bein HaPetarim, why doesn't God just take us out?
Like another miracle.
Okay, it was like a, yeah. If God can do it when you're in the 49th level of Tuma, why does God give you Brit Milah? Do you hear what I'm saying? So what God does is God says, I can't, I want to help you because I promised Avraham that I would help you. But you can't, I can't, you're not really worth it. So I'm going to give you some mitzvahs. That's what Rashi says, right? So I saw that so what did I do? To give you something, I give you two commandments to occupy yourself in order that you can be redeemed. You were naked and bare, so I gave you two mitzvahs, the Brit of Dam, okay? And I say to you, circumcise yourself and sacrifice the Dam Pesach, the Korban Pesach, and by those bloods you will live. B'demai chayi, b'demai chayi. We say this at a Brit Milah also, not just at the Pesach sacrifice, but in the in the Leil HaSeder. But you probably have noticed this if you ever go to a bris. There's this moment that is call and response in the Seder. We say v'yomar lach b'demai chayi, v'yomar lach b'demai chayi. It says it's twice in the Torah there. In Yechezkel. Once, the first time is for the. Why is it twice? Two mitzvahs, okay? The Brit Pesach and the Brit Milah. Two bloods, the blood of this and the blood of that. Okay, we add a third blood. Yes, ma'am.
One of the things we were talking about is how B'nai Israel might not really know what's going on, and they think, like, okay, we're only going for 3 days. That's what we're hearing. They didn't really ask to be redeemed, and they might be feeling like really disempowered in this whole situation, and the mitzvot, now that you're saying this, could be a way of like having them buy into it, and turning it into like a covenant is not a one-sided thing. A covenant is like when we make a pact together that I'm going to do one thing and you're going to do another thing, and we're both bought into this like shared enterprise.
Exactly, that's exactly what I wanted to say. Thank you. Okay. God could have just taken us, but God insists that we have to have a little hishtadlus. When I was at the Purim Spiel at Chappelle's, and they did a whole shtick of not this year, but when I was your age, and and they like a whole thing about bitachon. You have to trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but also hishtadlus. You have to hishtadlus means. Participation. Okay? It can't be free. You have to have a copay. If you don't have a copay, you don't value it. Okay? That's why everyone pays $500 when they come to Pardes. Okay? Because otherwise you think it's different. Like there's no, you can't, whatever your scholarship is, everyone has to pay. Hishtadlus, a little bit of participation. So that's perfect, actually, that you make it the Brit Milah. Why? Because what's the message of Milah? Okay, Sefer HaChinuch says that the idea of circumcision is that you should know that if you want to be perfect, God can make you perfect. But, all right, let's talk about men here. If men want to be perfect, then a little less is more. Okay, and that the lessness has to be created by us. We have to do it ourselves. Okay, that the... we always are in a process of, it's symbolic, okay, the symbolism applies to everybody, that we're always in a process of becoming perfect, and that the perfection doesn't come of its own accord. You have to buy in. You have to have a copay. So God made an almost perfect child, and you snip the child to show that the perfection has to be a partnership, okay? It's a powerful religious idea. Of this idea of we've got two powerful religious ideas. The powerful religious idea of Brit Bein HaBetzarim is that you need darkness to find light. You can't just really appreciate freedom unless you come from a dark place. Okay, so the darkness helps you get to the light, and it's absolutely essential. There's no such thing as being free without first being a slave. And then the second thing is, and you can't let it happen to you. It can't happen to you. You have to participate in it. It has to come also from you. I could have been satisfied with that. I could have actually, like, that would have been enough for me. And that's, but that's where the Pachad Yitzchak starts. Okay? That's where the Pachad Yitzchak starts. And he starts with this Gemara that I love. Okay? But I wouldn't have thought to put it with Pesach, and he does. On page 3. Okay? Another Brit Avraham. Talmud Ketubot 8. The situation is that they're in a house of mourning. Okay, and Reish Lakish, it's a kind of funny, strange story, but Reish Lakish shows up at the house, and they had this thing we learned about in our Gemara share about Birkat Avelim. Remember Birkat Avelim, you need 10? Okay, so what was this thing called Birkat Avelim, that you would make a blessing over the mornings? They had this sort of set of Sheva Brachas. So one of the Sheva Brachas that you would say in a house of mourning was... one of them was directed at the mourners. And this is what the blessing that he said at that time. Acheinu gomle chasadim, b'nei gomle chasadim, hamachzikim b'brito shel Avraham Avinu. Okay? My brethren, bestowers of kindness, the children of bestowers of kindness, who are holding fast to the covenant of Avraham Avinu. Acheinu, my brothers, my family, Baal HaGamul Yishalem Lechem Gmulchem. The master of recompense, right, who of bestowing, is going to bestow, should pay you guys back for your bestowing. Blessed is God who bestows. Okay, so it turns out that when we visit a mourner, we're standing there. We're there to be with the mourner in her time of need. And we go there to be there ourselves. And when we be there, we be there in command, in community, and we're representing each other. And it turns out that we're also representing 3 generations, right? Or 1,000 generations of... we're part of a life of a national tradition of bestowing kindness. And we are holding on to this covenant. And because we do that, we can call down God. We are Gomel Chesed, and so we call down God to Gomel Lanu, okay? To do the same verb for us, to pay us back, to give that recompense. So we see, what you see here in this covenant is that there's, that Chesed is a brit, okay? What's important in this Gemara is the use of the language brit, yes.
We thought it was really interesting to think about, like, bringing up the covenant at a time where you feel so, like, disheartened and sad. Mm. And to think about, like, when we started the class talking about, like, Yaakov making the decision to go to Mitzrayim knowing that he was one of the trash generations. And how being reminded of a covenant that you might not feel like you're benefiting from at the moment can still be really powerful. Mm. We thought that was
That's so beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. So that's a moment of darkness. We're in it for the long haul, and the moment of darkness can be continued. It's beautiful. Yes, Abigail.
I'm actually glad, I'm glad to be hearing these rereadings, because my chavruta and I on first read thought they were funny things to be saying to someone mourning the loss of their child. Like, somewhere on the borderline between, like, helpful and tactless. you know, like that God owes you one. That's how it sounds, right? The payment for recompense. Like, that somehow the covenant is supposed to contain that you pass this on to your children, but you just lost your child, and so God... like, what a funny thing to say. But I like this better.
That's it. Okay, also, this is... there might be a little of that actually going on in the Gemara, too, if you guys took out the Gemara. So where is this idea? Where is this idea of the covenant of Abraham having to do with Chesed? Okay, as we can see already here, we're going to put Brit Chesed. So that we've got three. We've got Brit in the middle, the Brit Ben Tzarim, the Brit Dam, and the Brit Chesed. It comes from... well, Rashi points out this, that Avraham nata eshel. he planted a tree, and that they understand this tree, Eshel, to be an acronym. The Aleph stands for, it made it into modern Hebrew too. The Aleph stands for Achila, for food. It means youth hostel, okay, hostel. The Aleph stands for food. The Shin stands for Shtia. And the Lamed stands for where you can sleep, okay? When you work, you get pay. If you travel for work, they give you Eshel money for those three things. Okay, so this was an abbreviation for what did he provide? And here, that's how it is in modern Hebrew, but here it means Livaya, that he would accompany you, and you see. So where do we see that actually happening? In the same place where there's this other, most of the Pachad Yitzchak is building on the two possibilities of verses. They're beautiful, the two verses. One that has to, that he could have said to identify the Brit Chesed. One is this verse, the Brit Eshel, and the other is the one that I tried to make everyone memorize, Ki Yedativ L'man Asher Yisaveh B'Navet V'Eito Acharav L'Lechet B'Derech Hashem L'Asot Tzedakah U'Mishpat, to go in the way of God, which is to do Tzedakah U'Mishpat. Because I know that God chooses Abraham because God knows that God will go, that Abraham will not just himself actually, but command his posterity, those who follow after him, to make a brit shemachzik me generation to generation that will go in the ways of God and do justice and righteousness. Okay, that's why God picked Abraham, and that's why God made a covenant with Abraham, because they are going to do these things. And that is in the context of Genesis 18. And this is where it all starts to get a little spooky, because it just so happens, right? Because you're aware, everyone knows that this is like the great moment of Abraham's hachnasat orchim, doing the mitzvah of kindness and letting in the guests. And everyone knows also that it happens to come one after the other, that we just had Genesis 15, Brit Bein Haptarim. And then we had Genesis 17, which was Brit Milah. And then immediately after, we have the Chesed in 18. And Rashi says, or not Rashi, let's say Midrash Tanchuma, page 4. Going down to Midrash Tanchuma, the second to last source on page 4. Looking up, he saw the three men standing near him. That's Abraham. And as soon as he saw them, he ran from the entrance gate to greet them. Are you with me? The second to last source on page 4. And the blood of the circumcision started to drip. Okay, you know, because you have a scab, and if it rubs, it will. So he's got a raw wound, but he's running after to do chesed, and and that's how eager he is. Of course, the point here is. The original point of the Midrash is the simple reading of the Midrash is that it has to do with just how eager and serious he and committed Abraham is to greeting the guests, that he doesn't care, he's not worrying about himself. It's very motherly, actually. Don't know, but that's all right. You know, like she would sacrifice herself and go hungry for the guests. And God says, "On your life as a reward, and because of your merit, I will have mercy on your children." With two bloods, right? I will punish your enemies as it's written. I passed by you and I saw your floundering in the bloods. Two bloods, as I said, you will live by your bloods. The blood of the Paschal sacrifice and the blood of the circumcision. So it was this moment, what caused God to say, I'm going to stick forever to the Brit Bein Haptarim after you've done the Brit Milah, was the fact that you were running to do chesed at this moment, okay? That you were running to do chesed, and that said, God, I'm going to reward you for your chesed by giving a second chance, right? This is because it all starts to repeat itself, right? It starts to become a cycle, because now this Brit Milah is not the Brit Milah that Abraham did, but that I'm going to give a second chance to the Jewish people to do a Brit Milah so that they can ignite this. That chance of the Jewish people to do that covenant is because of this chesed. And, gosh, crazy. Crazy. But then the thing that really knocks you dead is the source right above it, Genesis Rabbah 48. Lushi va'asi ugot. Right? God, Abraham runs in and he says to Sarah, Sarah, quick, quick, quick! You gotta make some bread! Okay, some ugot. But he doesn't say make some bread. He says make some ugot. Now, why does he say ugot? The simple reading of the word ugot is like, because you gotta make them quick. Okay, they gotta be thin so that they will cook quickly because you see that he's racing around to serve the guests. Because he doesn't want the guests to stay. So he makes quick bread. But now you're like, oh. So the simple reading is ugot, that they're quick bread. But we all know what quick bread is. When you read it today, it's obvious that it's matzah. And that is why the Midrash says, and this is why it said, that it was Erev Pesach. That Lushi v'asi ugot was that the And it's too much because then you see that Abraham was, because it's a little redemption for Abraham, because what's happening at that moment, he's welcoming those guests, and what's coming when he welcomes those guests is his own little redemption. And we can have it then, this qualifies for a redemption, to be told that you're going to have a child. Okay? It's a little, I've been there. So want to have a child and to need cure. It's not just a little redemption. Okay, so that's all the pieces. Now we can easily read the Pachad Yitzchak. Okay, but you had to need all of that to be able to understand the Pachad Yitzchak. He sticks it all into one paragraph, and I managed to schlep it out into an hour and a half. Here it is. Okay, I'm on page... I'm just skipping the first paragraph and going straight to paragraph... to page 5, which is paragraph 6. This is his last paragraph of this passage. And now, after all of this, we really understand the words of Chazal well when we say that knead and make cakes refers to matzah. Okay? Because the fact that making cakes is the covenant of chesed of our father Abraham. And just as the Exodus is connected to the covenant of circumcision of Abraham, as our father says, b'damai chayi, you shall live by your blood. Similarly, Exodus is connected to the covenant of the chesed of Abraham. Okay, so there's two covenants. There's the covenant of dam, and there's covenant of chesed. That is to say that the core of matzot, is the symbolism of matzah, is the symbol of chesed. Knead and make cakes. I thought I corrected the spelling, I'm sorry. And as they said about, he hurried and ran to greet them. That was the blood of circumcision that was still dripping. And the intention of this is to connect the two covenants, to see Brit Milah, to Brit Adam and Brit Chesed as totally inseparable from each other. And as we find in the notion of, we're still dripping, and the intention is to connect the two covenants, the covenant of blood and the covenant of Chesed. And as we find in the notion of Exodus, the remembrance of the covenant of Abraham, our father, is twofold. The covenant sealed in our flesh of dam, which is, of course, symbolized by the Pesach. And the covenant of chesed, which is, of course, symbolized by the matzot. And as we find in the notions of Exodus, the remembrance of the covenant of our father, I'm reading the text again. And for generations, the two covenants are connected on the eve of the 15th of Nisan. No circumcised can eat of it. The olive bulk of matzah that is kneading and making cakes, which is the welcoming of guests. Okay, now, of course, what needs to go here is Maror. If there's three things that you have to say on Pesach, what are they? Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. Three pieces of our covenant. This is amazing, right? The three pieces of our covenant, which are the covenant that sometimes you have to have darkness in order to get to light. The covenant of you have to hishtabus, participation. You have to sacrifice with your blood. You're only getting there through sweat and tears. You have to do inner work, okay? This is about improving yourself. But if it stops there, says the Pachad Yitzchak, you've missed the important piece, which is the matzah, which is the turning outwards, okay? Yes, you can't do it unless you turn inwards and you do the hard work and you perfect yourself. But the goal of that perfecting yourself is to turn outwards and do something nice for somebody else, okay? And that becomes the core of the Korban Pesach, I mean, of the Leil HaSeder, Pesach Matzah Maror. Okay, so let me, I have more things to say, but let me just summarize, because really the share is over. So let me just summarize what we accomplished. Okay, that Avraham is absolutely essential to the night. He's at this, because he's the center of our covenant. Okay, that's what the covenant is. There's a lot to think about the covenant. There's so much more here that you can talk about at your Seder and before your Seder. That breed destines us to exile. It's hard, okay? And redemption is interconnected. It's a deep promise of love and loyalty. God is sticking by us and loves us even when we do not seem to ourselves to be accomplished. Okay, because maybe I'm not the only one. I like to think that I'm not the only one that has moments of feeling deeply insufficient. At that moment, you say, okay, nachon, I'm taking the gifts that God gave me and the love that God gave me, and I am circumcising my heart. trying to perfect myself. But it's not automatic. We have to do it ourselves. God will love us as long as we bone up. Okay, we have to... And then... And then after we're strong in ourselves, then the goal is to turn it forward, to make it into a chesed, and to make that redemption possible. We need to be machzikim bebrito shel Avraham Avinu. We have to hold tight to that covenant of Avraham Avinu. Okay, so how are we going to do it? We have to have chesed. So you see, that's the share, but I want you to see how that works into the Seder, okay? In the beginning and the end of the Seder, on page 5, okay, the opening Mishnah, this is the first Mishnah of the Seder night, right? The 10th, it's the end of the thing. The 10th chapter is about Seder night, and it says, even the poorest person in Israel must, okay, on the eve of Passover, from close to the time of the afternoon offering, no one must eat until nightfall. That sentence I left there, so you know that we're just getting, it's time to prepare for Seder. How do you prepare for Seder? Even the poorest person in Israel must not eat on the night of the Passover until he reclines. Okay, you have to focus your attention. When you're getting prepared for the Seder, you focus your attention by making sure the poor people are taken care of. Even they must give him no fewer than 4 cups of wine. Okay, who's the they that's going to give it to them? You! Okay, you can't be prepared for Seder unless you've given them, you made sure that everyone around you has 4 cups of wine, even if you have to get it from the emergency. You wouldn't normally give people wine from charity, okay? But this night, everybody has to have wine. Everybody has to recline because your freedom is dependent. And now you really see why your freedom is dependent on the freedom being all of us together, because chesed, if you're not a person of chesed, then you can't go, right? You can't go unless they agree to accept your chesed. Okay, so you need them. And that's why... I'm going to skip the last Gemara, but just that's why we open the door at the beginning of the Seder, and say, well, we don't really literally open the door at the beginning of the Seder, although I think you can open the door literally. I think it's a beautiful idea. Halachma, kol dichvin yetevi echol. Everyone who's hungry, let them come and eat. That's at the beginning of the Seder. Everyone, please come in. And then at the end, you open the door again. Who are you opening for the door for again? For Elijah. How does Elijah dress? As a poor person. He comes in disguise as a poor person. Okay? Now, you don't know which poor person is Elijah. But you can be sure that your redemption is built on that poor person. And every one of us could be Elijah. Okay? So, I wish you a Pesach of Chesed. Thank you all.
This is a production of the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, visit elmad.pardes.org.